He looks like a guy who'd write alternative history books about World War II and the Civil War. I love his beard, though.
Thank you for joining the Escape With Me book club. Escape with me, Sam Reiner.
And me, James Reiner.
Into our most recent read, come with us as we evade reality and go into detail about a new book. We'll be covering the book from beginning to end, so remember, there will be spoilers. Today, we're going to an alternate France and Madrid, published December 27th, 2005. In High Places is the third installment in the Cross Time Traffic series. Annette and her family are preparing to return home when they and a French soldier named Jacques get captured by slavers. Not only is she separated from her parents, she finds herself transported to a new alternative. With no hope of being rescued, the only way out is to escape. But how?
Bum, bum,
So we are continuing this series that is one you read. So you said you read these out of order?
I did.
Do you remember when you read this one? Was it an earlier one or like a later one?
It was later. The first one I read, of course, was Disunited States, which, if I'm not mistaken, is the next one.
Yeah, it's the next one.
Yeah, so I read Disunited States, and I think I read The Gladiator, which is the one right after Disunited States. And then I read Gunpowder Empire and Curious Notions, and then I think this one, and then the last one I read, I believe, is the last one in the series, which is West Valley War, I think it's called. But this one was one of the later ones, so I was pretty familiar at this point with the Cross Time series. Out of order.
Yeah. I could say at this point, I feel like we've hit a groove. You know kind of what you're getting from the series.
Oh, yeah. Especially with Turtle Dove. You read one Turtle Dove, you basically get the idea how he writes most of his books. A slow burn, for sure.
So going back through them, has your perspective of the book changed a little reading it in the proper order versus reading it out of order?
Yeah. It makes me think I kind of did myself a disservice, and I'm doing a bit of a spoiler here, but I was pretty shocked when in this book and the last book that the people from the alternate timeline ended up in the main timeline with the protagonists, because this is the last time this happens. So it's a bit of a spoiler. There's no other time where a person from the timeline comes back to Cross Time, even though it's temptingly so. In the other books, there's a lot of possibility that they could go back with the protagonist, but they never do. So I was shocked when I read this one and the other one when they actually allowed someone from an alternative universe into our main timeline, which for this book really emphasized, because unlike the other books, I feel like the real exposure here isn't so much the alternative timeline that we get exposed to, which is a alternative world where the Black Plague was more devastating to Western Europe, but we get more of an exposure to how fallible cross-time traffic is and the main timeline.
Not to go too into it before we do. Age level.
Definitely teen.
Yeah, we've been saying mid-lit for these books, but this one's more YA to me.
It is a little older. It is probably, out of all of them, the darkest one, aka the more mature one, I guess. Not dark, but it definitely deals with some pretty adult themes.
Yeah, because we'll do the content warning just real quick. Religious discrimination, sexism, racism, slavery, graphic violence, murder, blood, kidnapping, rape is implied.
Mm-hmm.
So there are moments where it's like, oh, the women go to the house and the main character being like, oh, I hope they don't notice me. And then sometimes they'll say things. Jock will be like, oh, you're in more danger than I am, you know, implying things.
Yeah.
But still, that's a pretty heavy topic for a mid-lit.
Definitely.
Even implied.
Yes, he does not shy away from it in this book. And I would have to say, compared to, he really doesn't have, and that is crazy to say, much rape in his adult series. So it is a little shocking to see it so heavily implied in his more young adult series.
So that is definitely a consideration if you're handing your sixth grader these books.
Yeah, not that I think there are any parents out there, but just so you know, you can totally skip this one and not miss anything out of the whole series if you're worried about it.
Yeah, I could totally see it pulling a Disney and being like, oh, okay, it's more dangerous for women, but not connecting the pieces. Because like I said, it's thoroughly implied, but it is, if you know, you know.
Yeah.
But to continue the content warning real quick, we also have gore, PG-13 language, abuse, physical, mental, and sexual. Sexual abuse is implied, and needles. There are needles. Lots of talk of needles.
As someone who's scared of needles, do you really have to include that one?
Look, man, I don't ask questions.
I guess if someone has a real phobia of needles.
I don't think yours is as serious as other people's.
Yeah, not like a hold me down.
Or you break into a cold sweat or any of that.
Well, I don't know. I have a small anxiety attack anytime they're about to stick me.
Fair, but I don't know. I don't think you reading about other people having needles would trigger you in the same way.
Yeah, which would say I really don't have a phobia, because I feel like people with real phobias, even if they read about it or see it represented on TV, they just can't do it.
Yeah.
Like, I can watch someone on TV get stuck with a needle.
So it is not my job to judge what is content warning worthy.
It's true.
I'm just here to relay the information.
With our discussion of postmodernist and language, we're going to get to a point where the content warning is just going to tell the whole story. This book has a female protagonist that travels with her family with a male suit.
I mean, isn't that what the back covers did anyway? We didn't used to have the back cover blurb, and now we have that. And now we have romance tropes where it's like, I want to know that they're going to share the same bed and fake marriage. People kind of want the story ruined for them anyway. That's my marketing eyes on it, not my literary husband, I know. But from marketing perspective, I don't think people, except for the end of mysteries or suspense novels, but I think most people want it ruined so they know that they're going to enjoy the book. But that's a totally separate conversation. To judge a book by its cover, I don't think this is actually a really good cover for what the book is actually about.
I mean, I would say yes, but you don't want to ruin the twist, of course.
No, but I never would have thought Black Plague.
Yeah, well, so the Black Plague twist, if I can go a little sci-fi rant on you, is a rather common alternative history, divergent, whatever you want to call it. It's a rather common one where people discuss, oh, what would happen if the Black Plague was, instead of killing, what is it, one third of Europe, it kills like 90% or 95% of Europe.
4 out of 5, so 80%.
Yeah, so Turtle Dove's certainly not the first one. So maybe that's part of why he didn't feel the real strong need to really represent it on the cover, because it's such a backdrop now. It'd be like saying, oh, it's set in an alternative civil war. Really, the plot isn't focused on the Black Plague. It's a very common, no one's going to be upset if we don't focus on that kind of alternative history.
Yeah.
Honestly, for those readers out there who are interested, one of the best books I've read, I haven't read too many, but one of the best books I've read on alternative history of the Black Plague being worst is called The Years of Salt and Sand by Kim Stanley Robinson. Yes, I'm saying that right. I'm looking at the book on my shelf. Kim Stanley Robinson, he's a pretty prolific sci-fi writer. He's written a book on Mars, kind of a futuristic. I haven't read those books, but the one I did read of his, this alternative history novel, is really good. It's a little trippy, but it's very interesting. He basically takes us from medieval Europe collapsing to Islam and Buddhism becoming the dominant religions, and America being colonized by China, and the Native Americans forming a kind of city-states kind of thing. They're never completely taken over, and Asia and the Middle East have a huge world war that lasts for decades that's bigger than World War One. It's a very fascinating book, but that is an example of how the Black Plague alternative history is rather popular. Even in his book, it's very momentary, and he kind of instead goes into other more interesting possibilities. Anyway, there's my sci-fi rant.
There we go. Because I will say the cover that I had, KK, because you had.
Yes.
Just from that, because I've made that whole rant about like, oh, people want to know what's in the book before they do, but I don't.
Well, that's you, though. You're the one that doesn't want to watch trailers of video games or movies because you don't want it spoiled in any way.
True. I want to go into my Pokemon game not knowing what they're going to evolve into. And I think I've created a very good bubble to do that. Except for I never count on my husband.
It's hard. I want to share things. I love trailers. I like things being shared with me.
But to look at the book and to look at the... Okay, none of the titles are super expressive to me.
It's true.
Gunpowder Empire made sense. Oh, it's an empire with guns. Gunpowder. And Gunpowder Empire is actually a very common phrase, apparently.
Yes, it is. It's actually a phrase that existed before Turtle Dove used it.
So you get something out of that. Curious Notion. You don't really get anything out of until you've read the book. I know why it's called In High Places for several reasons, but In High Places is just straight off, okay, cool, we're in the mountains. And I was looking at it, so I was like, oh, is this a Slavic book where it's some sort of war is happening in Russia? And that's where I was. And no, that is not at all what this book is about. So this cover was not helpful to me.
So what do you think the name of the book really means? What is it referring to?
So there's two things. First of all, he uses the title In High Places in the book.
Mm-hmm.
Let me find exactly where it is. Yeah, here it is. So it makes it pretty obvious. Really, pretty early in the book, she complains that there's clearly corruption in high places in cross-time traffic for this to exist. So that's what the in high places is.
Yeah, it was hidden in plain sight, but the book's twist is in the title, huh?
Yeah, but like I said, I took it literally.
Yes.
And I guess it is a little literal, but not geographically.
Yes, not geographically. And I don't know, class-wise, there's lots of ways. Really, if anything, this book is very post-colonial in that it finally addresses you can't have this advanced society from the main timeline invading other timelines and not deal with some of the repercussions and negative effects that come with it, which is inherent of colonialism, which is what basically timeline traffic is doing to these other timelines. They're colonizing them. I mean, they're going there for resources. They're disrupting the status quo, changing the culture. I mean, and Curious Notions, that's exactly what happened. They left a huge impact with all the crazy things they pulled in that timeline, in the, not as much in the Gunpowder Empire, but they made some ripple effect there too.
But yeah, you can see how even when they're not trying, they cause an issue. And so it's like, well, what if we tried?
What if we tried? And then this full on embraces the cross-time traffic as an organization is a colonizing system. And wouldn't you know it, there's some corruption in there that's doing some verdy, familiar, nefarious colonial things.
Yeah. So let's talk about the world, because we don't actually spend a lot of time in the world. And I think the world is fascinating. So I'm a little sad. But the reason I think it's fascinating is because it's, as you said, what if the Black Plague was worse, basically?
And it's the familiar in most of them. The agreed consensus is that Europe wouldn't have advanced as quickly as it did. And it would have probably gave room for other societies, cultures, nations to have more of a chance to not get overshadowed or squashed by Europe so quickly. So Europe's not the top dog in the world. Other places like the Middle East and Asia are thriving. North America isn't really. Do they mention it? I can't remember.
They are just now getting to North America.
North America. So it's the 21st century, but everything's behind and Europe is just like everyone else. They don't have the whole colonial boom, which is ironic that the place we start in, it reflects a Europe that never really went colonial. And then we interact with main cross time, which is colonial. So it's the place that never went colonial is getting colonized, basically.
Well, yeah, they don't stand a chance.
Exactly.
So the other interesting things is the basically Muslim Empire spreads super far. They get into Spain, they get into the south of France.
Mm-hmm. Which makes sense because that happened in real history.
It did, but no one was able to kick them out.
Exactly.
They weren't able to be kicked out. Annette points out something else that's really interesting in history, and you can explain it better than I can.
Possibly.
But I will start you on this path. The two concepts of science versus faith.
Oh, yes. Turtle Dove actually comes out with another book, Through Darkest Europe, where he explores this whole turn that European Christianity has, where they decide to embrace science a little bit more, where Islam decides not to. Now, we're oversimplifying. Turtle Dove kind of does, too.
Essentially, the Christian guy was like, can science and faith exist in the same place? And he was like, yes, it can. And then the Muslim guy was like, no, it can't. Science will destroy faith or something like that.
Exactly. And in his other book, Through Darkest Europe, it's reversed where the Muslim philosopher says, yes, science and faith can coexist, where the Christian philosopher says, no, they can't. And Europe becomes like the Middle East today, where they're kind of stuck with Christianity as a very archaic and repressive. Women have to dress like nuns. People are always fighting each other, where the Middle East and North Africa become the hub of civilization, like Europe kind of became in history, where they go out and colonize and they go out and create a bunch of inventions and they fight wars and kind of become the pinnacle of civilization. I put that in quotation marks because there's a lot of assumptions and everything I'm saying, kind of putting Europe on a pedestal, which has retrospectively been reviewed recently in history and philosophy and things like that. But anyways, I digress. This book addresses it too. They're kind of mired still in not accepting science because of the Black Plague. There's no Renaissance. There's no Age of Enlightenment. There's no Industrial Revolution. So they're still kind of stuck barely out of the Middle Ages.
Yeah, so that's where they are technology-wise. And that's also where they are slavery-wise.
Yes.
Because we've talked about this personally. But for the podcast, I think it's interesting. The first book, Gunpowder Empire, talks about slavery. But it talks about the why of slavery. Why did it happen? And it really digs into, oh, I get it. The kids at the end are like, I get it. I hate it, but I get it. And I feel like this book goes in an assumption, oh, yeah, you understand why slavery is a thing. There's a throwaway line, oh, it makes life more easy or something like that. And instead, he focuses on the how of slavery.
And he's already in Gunpowder Empire to explain the, oh, it makes sense. They didn't have machines, yada, yada. But this one truly shows, but no, there's also a power high from it, an ego trip, a I am the master, you are my servant, you are my slave, I am in control. That gives me this inflated ego of power. That's more represented here. Turtle Dove's showing that, no, slavery corrupts. It's not a good institution. He's really clarifying it in this book.
Yeah.
Of course, Turtle Dove's not like, pro-slavery, woo!
Yeah. Also, to point out, well, technically, we just got new slaves, machines. They do all the work for us. We don't have to do it. And, oh, sorry, I'm getting close to the AI cyborg conversation, but not to get into all that. But the interesting thing I find is the second son. Oh, we could have gone all day with the second son, but we did it. And I was just like, ah!
Oh, the religion. Yeah, explain that.
Christianity is different in different places, depending on what has happened, which makes sense. In this one, there was the first son, which is Jesus. And so they have the sign of the cross. But at the end of the plague, there was a guy named Henry, and he prophesied. And there is a book. I want to say it's the Book of Henry. I could be wrong, but he has a book now. And so he was a healer. He talked about having humility and things like that. And around the time he was talking, the plague was finally ending. And then it all concludes with a very interesting, oh no, he is actually a bad person. So we're going to crucify him, but not crucify him. They put him on a wheel.
Yes.
And do other medieval torture beside the Roman Empire torture. And so they kill him. And then the next day, the Pope and the King go into a church and the church just explodes. I don't even know. The roof falls in and kills both of them. And so everyone is immediately like, oh,
uh-oh. Yep. And a new religion starts where Henry, the second son, becomes more important than Christ, the first son. And it's a whole new religion in Europe.
And they make the sign of the wheel.
Yes. It's my favorite part of the book. It's so inventive and new and so out of left field, which in an alternative history is always a plus.
And it really makes you think about it because you grow up with the sign of the cross and you're like, yeah, the cross, whatever. Even if you're a Christian, you're like, yeah, the cross. But seeing it juxtaposed and being like, oh, I make the sign of the wheel. And it's like, that's the thing he died on. You're like, wait a second.
Yep, that's the thing he died on.
It's the same thing when I realized that Snow White's first name is Snow. They sat there and they named their child Snow, and I just like never thought about it. It's always been Snow White.
How weird that is. Yeah.
How weird is her first name is Snow? And I read a book and they're like, Snow. And I'm like, oh.
So we're in a 21st century Europe that's still barely out of the Middle Ages. We have a religion that's based off the Henry the Second son. Slavery still exists. Who are our characters, Sam?
So we have Annette and her parents aren't important, so don't worry about them.
Yeah, they barely are in the book.
And they are Americans.
Yes, they're Americans from California.
In our timeline.
Yes, California once again. Spoiler, Turtle Dove is from California, so it is in his books a lot.
Well, she's graduated high school. She's about to attend her first semester at Ohio State. Very excited for her. She's very excited. So it's at the end of her mission versus the other two, which had been at the beginning. And so they're like, cool, we're going home. So in their home timeline, they're Jewish, which brings up really interesting thoughts at the end of the book. But we're going to put a pin in that. They're actually Jewish. And so in this world, they're Muslims.
Muslims, a very dominant religion. It makes sense.
Yeah. And it's not a good place to be Jewish.
Yes, not at all.
That can be said for so much of history, but not a good time.
Yeah. Let's just say the policies in the Middle Ages, which were not kind to Jews, are still very much in place in this version of Europe.
To not spoil at all, but this conversation happens at the end of the book when she's like, hey, I'm actually Jewish. She'd be like, what would you do if you saw a Jewish person? He's like, I would pick up a rock and throw it at them.
Mm.
Without a thought. It's like, that's just what we do. We just throw rocks at Jewish people. And she has to be like, hey, do you think Jewish people like getting rocks thrown at them? And he's like, oh.
Never thought of that.
So it's not a great time to be Jewish.
Yeah. Jacques, her friend, is not very sharp, but that's because of the time he lives in. So opposite Annette is Jacques.
And the whole point of being in cross-time traffic in this place is to do business to gain resources.
Yes.
So because of that, they are Muslim.
Yes. They are Muslim traders specifically to help them obtain food for a cross-tribe for the main timeline.
Olive oil.
Olive oil, especially, yes.
Because each one has been something different. The first one was wheat. Second one was grapes.
Yep.
This one is olive oil. My gosh, you must have so many timelines to get. So tired. Anyway, cross-time traffic is massive, but that's beside the point. Well, it's not beside the point, because that's actually kind of the point in the problem. But anyway, Jacques works for this dude who's the Duke of Paris. I think we're in Paris when we start out. And so they're suspicious of the Muslim traders, because of course they are. That's the plot. Cross-time traffic series formula. The government is suspicious of the cross-time people.
Because they think they can have super cool stuff in the midst and not get people raising eyebrows at them.
Yeah. So the problem is, because that's normally what the problem is, they did it right here. They are trading in olive oil. The problem is they speak the language too well.
Ah, yes.
So Annette figures that out later. He's like, oh, dang it. Because they have these little implants in their brain where they can just learn language, which, jealous.
Yes. Which is my favorite part of the book, where they finally explain all that.
So the problem is they got a native of France gave them the language. And so that's how they speak it. And she's like, oh, dang it. We should have gotten a Muslim from South France version of the French.
Yes. So they sound too proper. It'd be like, I guess the closest we could say that you're in the middle of the South and you speak with that crisp New England accent. And people are going to be like, you speak weird because you didn't get the right Southern accent.
Yeah, because supposedly you're from the South.
Yes, you're from the South, but you speak like you're from the Midwest or Boston or something like that. You're like, that doesn't compute. That's weird. You sure you live from there?
How did you get this accent? So that's how they got this time. And she's like, oh, dang it. So Jacques gets told to be a bodyguard for their merchant caravan as they go off to the city that they're actually from, where they can get to the portal and they can go back home and she can go to Ohio State. She only brings up Ohio State a bunch of times. So I can't blame her either.
That's, I think, more turtle dove than her.
Well, we say that. I agree 100%. I remember going to college and being like, you know, when I go to college and I do this and I'm already kind of there.
Yes, that is what I love about Turtle Dove is he is accurate. People just do repeat themselves.
I think it's so realistic. She's excited to go to college and so that's what she wants to talk about. And, yep, but I remember she's going to Ohio State specifically. So it's going fine and standy and whatever, and then it's not. And then slavers come along and they get to the party and they kind of take them out. And so they get separated and half of them continue on to the city that they were going to. It's a French city that I refuse to try to pronounce that starts with M. And the other half go to Madrid.
Yes.
I'll give Spanish a try, but not French. And also Madrid's a pretty common word. So she's freaking out because her parents went to the other one. She's like, oh, okay, well, they're going to figure out I'm in Madrid and it's fine. And so they do the slaver's market, go through all the steps of that, of being taken there and waiting in the slave barracks, and then goes through the entire auction. They go through the men first, and then they have to do the women and all the people bidding and all the people just watching because they have nothing better to do. TV hasn't been invented, so they can't have trashy TV. This is as close as we got. You get basically these two guys, and first, they're so suspicious. There's a super wealthy guy that's buying all the slaves, and then there's this other dude that's also apparently super wealthy, but not as wealthy. And the second guy who keeps losing the slaves is like, 10 years ago, we never would have even known your name, but I have been here for centuries and generations. And I was like, oh no, who is this? This is not good. Recently established is very concerning in these books.
You were a lot sharper than me because I did not guess that's what was going on.
So here's the thing. When I read this, I was like, crap, another alternate is doing this too. I thought somebody else had come up with the technology.
Yeah, he does build that up, because in the other books he does keep mentioning, oh, what would happen if someone from another timeline got the technology to travel cross time? We would have some real problems.
And so here's the thing. This is the reason I thought it wasn't cross time traffic. Cross time traffic is, as much as they're bad at it, but the training specifically is like, don't make a big deal of yourself. Don't make a big deal of yourself. You're just a humble little trader with these nice items. You just want your food and keep going. But this dude is showing off. He's like, look at my amazing riches. Let me buy all these slaves in front of you. Let me parade them through town to be like, oh, I am so rich. I was like, okay, this is not cross-time traffic. This is sus. So I thought it was someone else. Eventually you find out it is cross-time traffic, and I was like, oh, that's less fun.
Well, sort of. I thought it was a crazy twist.
Oh, well, I had a better one in mind, I guess. But yeah, it's cross time. They are in this mansion or whatever, and they're like, oh, in the morning, oh, people disappear. They go to the demons or something like that, the ghost or whatever. And the people there are like, oh, no. We just, in the early mornings, we send them to the other manors. It's fine. And I was like, okay, yeah. Okay, sure. They just go to the basement and disappear. Where have I heard that before? Turtle Dove's making me suspicious of basements. You have a basement that's suspicious. Anyway, of course, they get taken to this other alternate that's even less technologically advanced.
They get taken. She's confused. And eventually she figures out it's not cross time per se. It's people who have the technology from cross time, who work for cross time, but are doing something with the technology on the side for other reasons.
Yeah.
She figures it out slowly because they go to another plane of existence. They're slaves still. And she slowly has to figure out, well, what is the purpose of this? Clearly they're from my timeline because they have the technology. I don't know why they're doing this. And she slowly starts to figure out that these people are doing this because they want some high from being slavers.
Yeah.
They want to wield this power in a way that makes them feel good in an evil way.
Yeah. And she finds that even grosser than normal slavery, because technically they're from a civilized world where that is a bad. Because she keeps running into this issue with Jacques where it's, oh, it's not that bad. Slavery is just part of life. He was like, oh, shucks, I wanted to own slaves, but I guess I am one. And you have another character who was like, oh, it's God's will that I'm a slave. Oh, well. And she's like, no, we should rise up and whatever. And they're just like, eh, kind of a regular Wednesday for us. And so she keeps dealing with that. And so that's why she thinks it's worse that these cross-time traffic people are doing it, is because they know it's bad.
Yes. And really, it's Turtle Dove making commentary. It could be used as an example of how old world slavery is different from the transatlantic slave trade, because the cross time people are doing it for the power high. There is no real reason at this point to have slaves. They do it because of more nefarious means.
They had to literally invent a situation where they could become slave owners.
Yes. So it is a commentary on definitely colonialism and exceptionalism, I guess you could say, and the more nefarious results from that.
So they have slaves, and here's my one thing that I kept coming back to that no one cares about but only me. The women are doing a garden where they're gonna get food, right?
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. Why are the guys building a road? Where are they building a road to?
That's what he says in the book. There is no point to the road. They're not gardening for a reason. They have supplies.
Oh, that's true.
That's what she starts to realize. Don't you remember that part? She's like, why are we gardening? Why are we building this road? There's no real purpose. And it's not because there's a purpose to it.
They wanted slaves.
They wanted slaves. They wanted to have that power, that feeling, which is terrible.
Because that was the thing. I was like, oh, they're building a road somewhere. Yeah, that kind of makes sense. And then they're like, oh, we hate the locals and we keep murdering them for fun. And okay, this is a little extra to take it out of the midlet. One of the guys is like, I carry the ears of the people that I murder. That is serial killer levels of concerning. Okay, well, wow. But yeah, like I said, they're just inventing work so they can be slave owners. I find it interesting. Can we talk about how this is a child's first look at BDSM with Bridget?
Oh, yeah.
So the other side of the coin.
Yeah, okay, there we go.
Because they're like, oh, they want to be masters and whatever. And so she's like, okay, I kind of get that, wanting power. But you meet this other girl who comes in with a new set of slaves, and she's kind of the worst. She's a terrible worker. She seems to purposely get in trouble all the time and all this stuff. And Annette's like, wow, she's just a really terrible, stupid girl. And then she finds out that she speaks her English, because there's different forms of English, obviously, but from her time and alternate English. And so she talks to her and she realizes that this is a super powerful CEO woman who is paid a ton of money to come and basically have an excursion where she pretends to be a slave for 2 weeks and gets hit and her hair pulled and all that. There are several chapters of the book where she talks to other characters and they're all trying to come to terms to it, to be like, okay, it makes sense why you want to be a master, but who wants to be a slave? And I'm just sitting there like, this is a children's first look at BDSM right here. I don't know what else to say about that. Yeah, it's a sexual kink for some people.
That did not cross my mind when I was reading that part.
What crossed your mind then? What was the point of that for you?
I mean, there are weird instances where rich people have wanted to know what it feels like to be poor. It was a very Prince and the Pauper situation for me. It was odd. It came out of left field for me. It kind of threw me out of the narrative a little bit, if I'm being honest, because I could understand people wanting to stroke their egos by pretending they're like slave masters. I can imagine some sick people out there like that, but it was odd. I didn't think of a sexual way with the BDSM. I thought of it more of as, I don't know, are we going to the Renfest here soon to pretend like we're in the Middle Ages? It's a fantasy trip, I guess.
Yeah, it was out of left field for me too. That was why I was like, I mean, I guess we should talk about the full issue, because that is definitely something here, and clearly how they're funding themselves. My goodness. But that was interesting. I don't know what else to say about that. So that's a lot of the plot of the book. So a big portion of it is, like I said, they know nobody can find them. She's established that Cross Time probably hasn't been here before, because they wouldn't be stupid enough to pick an alternate that they would be. Also, it's super low tech, and she makes friends with a woman that's from this area.
Yeah, she communicates with simple gestures and whatnot.
And goes into really interesting, how do you learn a language from someone you don't know the language of? And so that was a really cool insight, because she is used to that implant.
Yeah, that makes it instant. So she gets a real feeling for what it's like to actually learn a language from someone.
Is the worst. But they do it. And it's actually a little funny, because Jacques picks up a lot of the language from this other guy that he becomes friends with. Oh, is that him? Musa? I want to say it's Musa.
I think so. Doesn't he die, though?
Yes.
He's Muslim and he refuses to eat pork, and they tell him to eat it or they're going to shoot him, and they shoot him over it.
Which you could see how humdrum all of this was. His friend just got brutally murdered, and then a new set of slaves comes through and he's like, gosh, dang it. Now I've got to learn this language.
Yes.
And so he makes friends with another guy.
Which, again, is very symbolic of the transatlantic slave trade, because a lot of the slaves from Africa were not from the same parts of Africa. They spoke different languages and had different cultures, and they were being squashed together on these plantations.
And expected to get along and work together.
And they had to figure out ways to communicate with each other and understand one another. And the slave owners took no efforts to understand them, which I think is represented by Jacques' friend being gunned down for not eating pork. So really, this is through and through. Once again, Turtle Dove isn't really doing anything new. He's taking an actual example from history and putting a alternative history coat of paint on it. This is really not about the Black Plague of Europe. It is about the more recent slave trade and its ramifications.
So Jacques is an interesting character, to talk about him a little bit more.
Yeah, he is very interesting. I agree with that. He's one of Turtle Dove's characters that definitely stick out to me. Some of his characters can be a little obvious, or I wouldn't say bland. Some people have said bland, but he's unique for sure.
He goes on an interesting personal journey that I don't feel like most of the other characters go through. You've pointed out previously that he has a tendency to have kind of one-dimensional characters.
Mm-hmm. Which, in his defense, we were talking about this earlier, where we said how she keeps mentioning Ohio State. A lot of people accuse him of this, but it makes sense for a lot of his novels. He doesn't want you to forget his characters, and a good way of doing that is making them redundant, making them say the same thing, or making them do very obvious things every time you see them. The benefit of that is your readers aren't going to forget your characters. I don't know how many books I've read where I go back to a character and I'm like, who is this person? I'm lost. I don't know them by name. I just know them by what they do. And I I've never felt that way in Turtle Dove. I never forget a character because the characters are pretty, this is what they are, which I appreciate. But the downside is you get accused for one-dimensional characters.
Yeah, because if you think about the personal journeys each character is going through, Lucy and Paul don't really change beginning to end. I'd argue neither do the brother and sister from the first book. They kind of learn a lesson, but they haven't changed. And Jacques gets a very broad range of experiences that make him rethink things in a realistic fashion.
Yes. I would also say, of all the books, because I've already spoiled it, only two characters from an alternative timeline go to the main timeline. We had Lucy from the last one.
Lucy, who figured it out herself.
Versus Jacques, who was thrusted into it. Lucy, who's from a world that isn't too far off from the main timeline. They have technology. They have the concept of computers and civil rights and things like that. To Jacques, who is basically, I would have to say, 15th or 16th century mentality being thrust into a 21st century mentality. There's a lot of development and growing, as you say, because of the circumstances. He is a character that is shown quite a bit of development.
Yeah, and it doesn't end where it's like, oh yeah, I totally agree with everything the 21st century says, which would be thoroughly unrealistic. He still has his religious beliefs, and even Annette is like, we're gonna see where this goes. I see potential in you, but I can't be friends with you if you keep all that other stuff. But I like how he gets shown stuff, because Annette knows all this stuff about technology, and he's just like, okay, this is magic. I don't know what you're talking about. This is demons and magic. That's what this is. And then you have another group of slaves that come in later that guns are magic to them. You boom over there and that dude dies. That's magic. And so he's trying to explain gunpowder to this dude. And he's like, it's not magic. He's like, it is magic. Not magic. I can't explain to you how it's not magic. And he's like, oh, I wonder if that's how she feels. And he thinks her name is Khadija. Is that how Khadija feels trying to explain teleportation to me? Is me trying to explain gunpowder to this dude? And so it's not like this stuff gets shoved in his face over and over again. He just has a unique set of experiences where he's like, oh, maybe that's how this other person feels. You know, developing empathy, which is very interesting. He is essentially developing empathy through the entire book.
Yeah, he's going through centuries of human development personally.
And philosophy and ethics.
Yes. But anyway, I feel like we've already danced around it, but we haven't said it straight out. She figures out after, what was her name? Burnett?
We're just going to give her real name because I don't trust myself to pronounce the name she was given. Bridget.
Bridget, thank you. Once Annette finds out about Bridget, she realizes that if some of these slaves are people from her timeline paying to have the slave experience, that if she does what Bridget does and walks up and says, I'm done, my time is up, they'll let her back to the main timeline. So that's exactly what she does. This is probably one of the boldest I've ever seen one of his characters. She wiggles her way, walks up and says, I'm done. And the guards are like, oh, wow, you're one of the people who pay to be here. That's crazy. I would have never guessed. They send her through the processing back to the main timeline. And when she gets to the front desk where she's supposed to check out, she just books it. And she gets a hold of the authorities. I'm going to try to summarize quickly. They use technology to figure out where the people are and what timeline. And they evade with some mercenaries.
Which, can we talk about main character privileges? This 18-year-old girl goes to the Spanish embassy and she's like, I want to be involved in everything. And so the Spanish army and cross-time traffic people are about to invade this, and she gets special permission to go back with them. That would never happen in real life, but she is main character, so she gets to go back there with them as they're doing this whole black ops mission, essentially. It made me laugh. Sorry, continue.
They take down the corrupt organization that's within cross-time, which they figure out. That's how they were able to use so much technology. There were actually some pretty high ups in the organization. So there's a huge trial. A lot of the people who've been enslaved testify, including Annette, including Jacques. They get prosecuted and the people are basically put into jail. Unfortunately, because all these people who've been enslaved were exposed to cross time, a lot of them have to be integrated into society, including Jacques. And that's how we get to the very end, where Jacques comes to a realization about Annette's real name, about her real timeline, about all her knowledge,
her true religion. Christian.
Yeah, he has to adjust to a 21st century lifestyle. I think one of the biggest moments is when he thinks a trash can is a chamber pot, and the hotel staff are not happy to find what he leaves in their trash can.
Yeah.
Because he's not used to that. He's not used to really indoor plumbing. That's only for the super rich, which isn't really plumbing. It's fancy outhouses.
I don't even think the Kingdom of Versailles would have it.
Probably not. It is described as really nasty. But anyways, because Jacques is slowly adjusting, the book ends, I think, on one of the best, which is Jacques goes and gets the implant where he doesn't have to speak his version of French anymore from his timeline. He gets an implant to understand 21st century main timeline English, and he's able to speak to Annette in our English, and it helps him. It helps him realize a few things, which to me, as an English nerd, I'm like, oh yes, if you have the language and the means, it really does change your outlook on life.
Well, I really liked that scene because it specifically says, as he learns the language, it opens his mind in a way that wasn't before because now he has the language for it. And every language has its own things that they focus on. What is the saying? Where it's like, you can tell what's important in the language depending on if it has a bunch of ways to describe it or whatever. Earning that language changed how he viewed things because it was different, and that's so cool. And we could talk about linguistics all day, but that was a really cool scene.
It was. It is one of my favorite, one of my more enjoyed endings, because the other ones are okay. I mean, it was a little anticlimactic in Gunpowder Empire. Curious Notions was a bit more climactic. I do love how her brother pulls off the gas mask. That's still one of my favorite endings. But this one has more of a, I don't know, happy ending for a Turtle Dove book. Most of the time, his endings are just endings. He just ends it because that's how real life is. You just end. There's no marriage ceremony where the two lovers get married or the Star Wars scene where everyone gets their medal. It's literally life just moves on. I mean, there is still more life moves on. I mean, Jacques still got a lot to learn, a lot of adjustment, but it is kind of a happier moment where he's like, oh yeah, I think I could do this.
And you have Amishtar, who I think is really cool to have the other side of it. Amishtar is from that other, they use low-tech society. So Jacques' alternate is low-tech for Annette, and Amishtar's alternate is low-tech for Jacques. So we kind of got layers there.
Yes.
She explains what time period it most likely stemmed off from, but basically people that settled an area didn't settle an area, and that's where we are with that. And so she explains, because Annette's like, oh, are you going to stay here in this alternate? And Mishtar has more of an option, and she's leaning towards, no, I want to go home. And Annette's like, but it's better here. You don't have to worry about making food all the time and backbreaking work and such and so forth. And people aren't overtly sexist here, because she does point out, it's like, no, we probably got sexist walking about, but they're not just going to be like out and open about it. And she kind of points out, it's like, well, forcing me to stay here and acclimate to your world would just be as much slavery to me than the other thing, because I don't get to have the freedom to make my own decision about it. And so Annette's sad to see her go, but I mean, like, at the same time, Amishtar should be allowed to make the decision. If she wants to go home to what's normal for her, then she should be allowed to go home.
Yeah, that was a good point of the book. Can't remember, did Cross Time do something with her, or did they just let her go back to her timeline?
They leave it open. The last time we see Amishtar, she's leaning towards going home.
Okay, so it's left open-ended.
Yeah, she had to come there because she had to be a witness at the trials.
Yes, I remember her witnessing at the trials, and I remember her having a hard time with adjusting. I just don't remember if they ever explained if, because under my impression, as I recall it, Jacques couldn't go back. I had the sense that Cross Time didn't want people to go back because they already knew that Cross Time existed.
Yeah, I think with Jacques, the problem was he knew too much, because Annette told him how all of it worked.
They were not so worried about her because she couldn't fully comprehend what was happening to her, where Jacques was a little closer and could comprehend what was happening to him. So they were more worried about releasing him back in his timeline versus them, which they would just sound crazy and religious to her people's time.
Yeah, plus to add to it, Cross Time traffic is still trying to function in his alternate versus Amishtar's, where it seems like
they aren't interested, or at least they hadn't found it yet, and now they probably will quarantine it.
Yeah, and so now, even if she was right, there's no way she could get back or it would change anything. But Jacques, knowing, hey, these could be Cross Time traffic agents, could cause an issue. So that might have played into their decision as well.
I think so. That makes sense.
While it's a YA book, I'd argue it still has a midlit ending where she goes to the Spanish embassy. She's like, oh no, what if they're working with the people? But no, they're all good people that want to do the thing, and all the courts, even though those that try to be sneaky about it. All the courts see through them, and all of them get punished and prosecuted, and none of the witnesses feel totally violated by having to relive their life for them and then being told they're a liar and all the great things that happen in court. None of that happens. It ends with her testifying at one of the master's hearings, which is interesting. We never actually get to meet any of them, really. But he was a super important guy in the security branch across time. So yeah, that makes sense. But he gets life with parole maybe in 25 years. So he still gets thoroughly punished despite his power and money. So it's a pretty happy ending. I have to agree. This is a happier ending. Because the last book, it was, oh yay, Paul and Lucy get to go on a date. But this one, it's like, and they all got justice.
Sort of. There is, in the remaining books, always the specter of cross time traffic isn't guiltless either. It has its flaws as well.
Yeah.
There could always be corruption on any corner. You can't really trust anything. What is the next one? The Disunited? I think the character in the Disunited States in the beginning even mentions there was this huge court case. So I think they are kind of chronological. But again, that was the first one I read. Turtle Dove does a very good job of explaining. He drops a hint about the last book without needing to read the last book. I kind of understood what the main character was talking about in the next one without having to read the book.
Which is always a good sign.
Oh, yeah. I mean, tell me, could you have read Curious Notions without reading Gunpowder Empire?
Oh, for sure. There was a thread you could see.
Yeah, there was. And I didn't realize this until I read it. Does the best job of all the books of explaining why. In the other books, there's never this long explanation of this is why we use cross time.
That's the beginning.
Yes, that shows them in the main timeline, buying food, watching a documentary in class about when it was created, why they use it. All that context was great, and it is a good start to the series. But like I show, you could jump into any book and you'd be fine. Turtle Dove explains things well enough where you could start at any book, honestly.
Yeah. General thoughts. I liked this book.
Versus the last one, which frustrated you, right?
I liked the last book too. I don't know. There was something. Let me say this. Reading this made me realize what was missing in the second book.
That's fair.
And once again, makes me think that the second book is terribly out of place in this series. But I will make that decision completely once I'm all the way through the books.
Didn't I say that last time that of all the books, I feel like the last one was the weakest?
Yeah.
You can see from this plot, it's very compelling. I feel the same way about the first book, Gunpowder Empire, and I feel that way about the rest of the books. Curious Notions, it just has the weaker plot of all of them. But I really like this one. I think it's bold. I think Turtle Dove went for it, and it is strong.
Yeah.
Out of all the books, this one, he goes the boldest. The other ones are okay. I mean, the next one is about a world where the United States, every state's kind of like its own country. The one after that is, what if communism won and capitalism didn't? What would a world with mostly communist countries look like? And then the last one is just pure old good old-fashioned fun, because it's just about a post-apocalyptic California, which is probably a good way, considering Turtle Dove's habit of always including California to end the series. But really, they're all good plots. But this one out of all of them is where he really emphasizes some really strong points.
Like we said, he creates this interesting world to begin with and then completely ignores it.
I mean, his Black Plague world's fine, but I'm fine he dropped it.
It's more made to explain Jock than it is to be the plot of the book.
Exactly. It is great as a background for Jock, but that's about it. I could really care less about anything else. It would have been a similar plot to Curious Notions, where it got old very quickly. Even though Curious Notions has a very interesting and more unique World War I victorious Germany, the setting got stale rather quickly.
Yeah, I feel like it would just turn into Gunpowder Empire Part 2.
Yeah, in a way.
But maybe instead of a siege, a war, because that felt like where they were leaning towards. But like I said, I just assumed from the cover war was happening.
Yeah, the cover's misleading. I think on purpose, though.
The back's not. I read the back of the book and it was like, nope, we're just going to tell you what's happening.
No, it doesn't. As they cross the Pyrenees, bandits attack. When Annette comes to, she's a captive in a caravan of slaves being taken to the markets in the south, where her purchasers take her to an unofficial they do. Gosh, dang.
Yeah, they tell the whole thing.
They do. Thing hereto unknown, leaving open the question of whether, oh my gosh, they do. I guess guess I never read the back, because to me, I was like, what the crap's happened? It was like a huge twist for it. Darn you, Tor Publishing, don't ruin the big twist.
That's so funny. That makes me think of Psycho, where there's a twist where what you think it's about is not actually what it's about. And you're like, oh my gosh, that's such a good twist. What was the trailers like? Did they try to hide it? And I watched a trailer and it's Alfred Hitchcock. And he's like, and here is where murder happens. And you're like, okay, never mind.
Okay, murder was always on the table.
No surprises.
No surprises.
Oh my gosh. One question for the author. I want to know, how does he pick the alternates?
Oh, he is a fan of alternative history. That actually is what inspired him to pursue his PhD.
Yeah.
So it would not surprise me if he's very familiar with other alternative history books, and that inspires him to ask the questions, what if, I would say, because as I learned in my creative science fiction class, one of the best advice for those who want to pursue writing science fiction is to immerse themselves in reading science fiction.
I mean, that's the advice for any author, really.
Actually, that is how my teacher presented it. He said he tried to buy a whole bunch of romance books, thinking, oh, I could just write a whole bunch of trashy romance books and make some money off it on the side. And after a weekend of trying to read romance books and start some romance novels, he realized, no, unless I'm really a fan of romance books and really commit to being a romance fan, I'm probably not going to write any good romance books.
No, they'll weed you out immediately and be like, you're not a true fan.
Exactly. Same with science fiction, he said. If you really want to be a good science fiction writer, immerse yourself. And I think that Turtle Dove is very familiar with alternative history concepts. He's invented a few good ones himself. For example, I think The Darkest Europe is a unique one. I haven't really heard too much. It's the concept of Muslim and Christianity switching. I like that. There is a few, but he really does it well. There's a few others, but I couldn't think of it. I do this every time we talk about his books, though. I think I go on a...
About all the other books that he writes? Yes.
Yes, I'm sorry. I am a bit of a turtle bug.
We should get sponsored.
Oh my gosh, if Turtle Dove ever found your stuff on YouTube, if he's one day on YouTube going, oh, I'm curious, I'm going to type one of my books in, and he finds your podcast, I would be so embarrassed of him listening to us jabber on about his books.
I stand by it.
Turtle Dove, I'm sorry. It's like when I meet celebrities at events, it makes me too nervous.
Well, I stand by it. Invite me to dinner. Let's talk. Sponsor the podcast.
All the way to California.
All the way to California. I'll go. I've never been to California. More than LAX. Let's go.
Oh, heavens. Did you ever want to do more Crosstime books? Going back through and talking with you about these makes me kind of sad he ends at the last one he did. He never continued on after that. I felt like there could have been a lot more potential. Honestly, at times I think this would make a pretty cool TV series, honestly. They would have to create more of a solid character and probably touch upon the stories already written, but I would like to see a TV show where it's a Crosstime group of employees and they have to deal with drama of going to... Anyways, I'm going on a tangent. But my question to him would be, if you had to write more for the Crosstime series, what alternative timelines would you write about to include into the series?
I don't know. Whatever magic that only ever seems to work in book form.
Mm-hmm.
But I agree. I worry that because I do Goodreads, and so it can tell you how many people have rated it, how many people want to read it, how many people are currently reading it, and the series numbers are low.
Yeah, that's probably why I dropped it.
Was it commercially viable?
It wasn't. I'm glad he did it, but it was probably a way more profitable to do the one-offs, which I feel like is always done lately.
Well, they're a staple in this house.
In the early 2000s, he did a lot of series like the Southern Victory series and the Invasion series and a few other series he tried, but I think the latest series he did were not well received. Like the War That Came Early wasn't very well received. And I notice anytime I see any new Turtle Dove book, it is mostly either a limited series like the Hot War series where he did a 3-book series on if the Korean War went hot, or one-offs like the more recent one I saw, What If Someone Found, I think, the Ark of the Covenant or something. I'm butchering what his last book was on, but it was a what if religion was kind of true, how would that affect more of the modern world, and a few others like Darkest Europe. I got this thing right here, let me check it. Darkest Europe came out in 2018. So yeah, recently he's been doing more of the one-offs if he writes anything, which I think is more viable as a purchase now than try to write the series or youth books.
Which might also help with burnout. I don't know how he was doing with all these series.
He probably was a little burnout. I think you could tell if you read his award-winning ones like How Few Remain or Guns of the South, which I still need to read. It's hilarious. I haven't read his most famous one. There are a lot higher quality as alternative history versus, say, his other stuff. This you can tell he's not putting his all into it because it's a young adult series. And there's a few other, like Darkest Europe, I really enjoyed, but compared to like How Few Remain, it's not the same. How Few Remain is one of his best books, I think.
There you go. Off again. Rating. I would say bringing down your bad boss out of 10. There is justice and happiness because of that justice that you just kind of wish. We all have the thing. I say bad boss. There's somebody that you want to see justice. And then imagining them getting that justice. And you're just like, yes, that's what I want.
I would give it a language implant in your head out of 10. Everything just connects really well, and it just gives you a good feeling in the end.
And it expands your viewpoint.
I imagine, I'm still thinking about what you mentioned before, how it's not popular. I've heard people reading his Gunpowder Empire. If that was a standalone book, that would have done well. I think it's when he turned it into a series, it started to peter off.
That is the one thing. Gunpowder Empire has very high, and you know, you expect to see it go down over time, but it drops.
Yeah, which is a shame. I think his Crosstime series is really good. The Disunited States, I really enjoy it. Gladiator is one of the best. And again, one of my favorites is the last one, just because I like post-apocalyptic literature, of course, but I think he really puts a good bit of fun into the last one.
It's like you said, his main target tends to be 30-year-old men.
Yeah.
He wrote a children's series.
It's fair. 30-year-old men. Yeah. Yeah. 30 and 40-year-old men is more his demographic. I couldn't get you to read all 10 books in a Southern Victory series. You would probably struggle to get past the first one. Well, no, not the first one. First one in that series is How Few Remains. But you could tell as he goes forward, he's more just kind of playing out the scenario than giving the award-winning writing he gave in the first book of the series.
Fair. Would you read it again? I would, but I would wait a while. I want to forget most of the details and then come back to it.
I would if I wasn't reading 20 billion other books.
Always the excuse.
I'm so sorry. I finished my book on 1812, which makes me wonder if Turtle Dove's done one on 1812. I think he has. I do know when every time I read from the 1812 book, which is based on the War of 1812, I kept looking up Wikipedia articles and other Google searches to check out. Honestly, the book, 1812 by, forget his name, was pretty historically accurate. And I even appreciate at the end, he gives a excerpt about what was real and what was made up fiction for his book, which I really appreciated. But during my research, I did find out in one of Turtle Dove's anthology books that he edited, meaning he didn't write the story, but he did compile the book, was a alternative history of a different 1812 scenario. So I thought that was cool. But you don't read many of those alternative War of 1812 books.
So the answer is you would probably just read another Harry Turtle Dove.
Probably. I have plenty of other ones I still haven't read of his. I have his two-book series on an alternative Pearl Harbor. I have, heavens, what else do I have of his that I haven't read? I think it's just that. Yeah, it's just that one. Or I need to read The End of the Beginning and Days of Infamy. It's about Japanese being successful at Midway, I think, and invade Hawaii. It's one of his lighter ones where the history doesn't change too much. It's just a slight tweak.
Light science fiction, not light as in topic-wise.
Yeah, not topic-wise. Light as in he doesn't go crazy. For example, his Southern Victory series where the South wins the Civil War. It's more Japanese are a little bit more victorious, but it's not going to result in America being invaded by Japan or anything like that. I think attacked by Japan, but that's about it. And I think that's it. I think I've read everything else I own of his. I don't have all his books, of course. I still haven't read the United States of Atlantis series or the War That Came Early series. Or his fantasy. I'm about to, though. You know I bought the books. I'm about to go into his one where he basically writes about World War I, but as a fantasy setting with dragons and whatnot. Equivalents, instead of airplanes, they're dragons. Instead of tanks, they're armored cover magical creatures that they ride into battle. Instead of mustard gas, it's magicians casting spells. It's different is what I've heard. I couldn't attest. I need to read the series. I got it on my shelf. It's on my plan to read. That's why I didn't read it this time, is because I have so many other books I really want to dive into right now.
Favorite in the series so far. So this book, I think I did myself a disservice. It was a long stretch of time between reading Gunpowder Empire and The Curious Notions. And so reading this book reminded me of all the things really good in Gunpowder Empire. And so I'm going to have to say Gunpowder Empire is my favorite.
Really?
Yeah.
Because last time you said it was Curious Notions just because you had a...
I said I could see it being either one.
Ah, that's what you said.
But this one reminded me, nah, Gunpowder Empire was better.
crazy. So far, I'd say this one for me, but only because we haven't really got to the good ones. This one's good, though. Out of the three we've gone over so far, this one is now the top dog, followed by Gunpowder Empire and then Curious Notions.
Thanks for exploring In High Places with us. Join us next time when we'll be exploring The Days of Blood and Starlight by Lonnie Taylor. I'm Sam Reiner.
And I'm James Reiner.
And we hope to see you and a friend here next time. Escape With Me Book Club is a Lunar Skulk production. Check us out on TikTok or Instagram to keep up to date with us. Lunar_SKULK.